Hope you'll turn with me to 2 Timothy chapter 2, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 20. But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, and also of wood and of earth, some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified, meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work. Now, the verse that I tried to talk from yesterday in Romans chapter 9, as God, as the perfect potter and the eternal potter, the sovereign creator of his clay, is a beautiful picture of eternal salvation and how him and his sovereignty has crafted us into a vessel after his own image and a vessel unto honor. And it's a beautiful picture, too, of as we think about the pottery that was prevalent in Bible times, that the potter would sculpt the vessel into whatever he sees fit, because again, the potter's sovereign and the clay is an inanimate object. But then after he's completed it, he puts his, I know many of you, if you buy a piece of a bowl or a plate, if you flip it over on the bottom, chances are it's going to tell you, if that's I buy a lot of Walmart products. It says Mainstay is on the bottom. That's the seal of who made that vessel. And the Lord put his seal on every one of us too. And that seal's not going to go away. And there's a whole lot that I could talk about the just a beautiful picture of how when the pottery it goes into the it's very not rigid substance, but then they put it into a kiln and it heats it up. And then there's a reason why there's so many fragments of pottery found in ancient times, because after that pottery is put into the fire, it doesn't disintegrate. See, like wood, if you eventually it'll just disintegrate and go back into dust. But even though that pot may be broken, those pot shards aren't going to go away. And that's, to me, that's a beautiful picture of eternal security too. That when God finishes his product, there's nothing that's going to disintegrate that product, and he puts the seal on it. So kind of with that thought in mind, but not exactly, because I want to make sure I delineate, in eternal salvation, God is the sovereign potter. We are the inanimate, passive clay. But once we've been made into a vessel of the master, then it's up to us to become a vessel that's meet for the master's use. Okay? Now, we can't make ourselves a vessel of the master. Okay? But after we already have our seal on us and we have been made into a vessel of honor, there's a sense in which, and we looked at it briefly on Friday night, that there were people in the Corinthian church that had done all these manner of sins and evils. And he says, but now you are washed and you are sanctified and you are justified. Well, we have a sense in which we are eternally sanctified. Sanctified means set apart for a holy use. And we have been eternally sanctified. But the Bible also teaches about practical sanctification, that the vessel that I have here, I need to use this vessel for the glory of the Master and for his use. And it's important that I don't want to present anything that would make you think. I don't want to use the same analogy, because God is not a fatalistic, absolute potter that makes our life into whatever he wants to make it into. But at the same time, it's not a matter of absolute predestination. It's more of a matter of providence, of how the Lord guides his children into a vessel that is meet for his use. Meet. We think about in Genesis when Adam was given a wife and he says, this is a help that is meet for you. That means a helper that is suitable for you. So when we see that we are a vessel meet for the master's use, we need to be a vessel that is suitable, that is useful in the master's service and in the master's kingdom. Now again, we can't make ourselves a vessel of the master, but after we have been already made that vessel, it's up to us to use this vessel to his glory and not for our own gratification. And you might here out in the world that, you know, it's particularly in the abortion movement, I guess, you know, it's my body, I can do whatever I want to with it. Well, I'm here to tell you, if you're a child of God, that's just simply not the case.
Right.
Because you've been bought, you've been paid for.
Right.
And simply put, your vessel is not your own anymore. And let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and see where this is clearly described to us. Verse 18, flee fornication. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body. He that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. What, know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own? Well, why are you not your own? Verse 20, for ye are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Simply put, the doctrine of redemption means that you were God's to start with. We fell into sin, and He bought us back from that sin. But that literally means that He paid the penalty, He paid the price, to where we're not our own anymore because we have been legally bought and paid for. And then as we fast forward to the end of time, when Jesus Christ returns and all the saints are resurrected, this body, this vessel that we have been given, it's going to go back to Him in a perfect manner. Now, this vessel, this body, is going to end up being perfectly sanctified. It's going to be perfect, made after the image of Jesus. But God calls on us to use this vessel that we've been given for a short period of time for His glory. And I hope that you understand that we were not created to go do whatever we want to whenever we want to do it. The purpose of creation is the glory of God. And without getting too sidetracked and looking at a whole bunch of verses to show you that, the reason why we have been created anew is for the purpose of the glory of God. And we need to make sure that we view our vessel in that light. My vessel is not, this body that I have been given, this temple that I have been given, is not for me to go do whatever I want to for a period of time. It's been bought and paid for. It's simply not my own anymore. And he emphasizes it very succinctly in verse 20, therefore glorify God and in your body and in your spirit, which are the Lord's. He bought your eternal spirit, but He also bought your natural body too. He bought the vessel on the cross too. So now in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, and you might think, well, I want to do what I want to do with my body. Why should I want to sacrifice my own desires or my own ambitions for the glory of God? Well, if you don't have a desire to serve the Lord in this vessel that we have, I would contend that you just simply do not fully grasp salvation, and you just simply do not fully grasp the gravity of grace. Because in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, in verse 14, first of all, it says, the love of Christ constraineth us. This word constraineth kind of has the picture. Paul had a verse, maybe in Philippians, where he says, I am in a strait betwixt two. A strait is a narrow passageway that you don't have the ability to go to the right or to the left. There's a set path that someone that's in a strait has to take. It makes us think about the straight gate, for broad is the gate that leadeth unto death, but narrow is the way and straight is the gate. The love of Christ that has been shed toward us, it compels us to a restricted path. That's what he's saying here. The love of Christ constraineth us. And in what manner does it constrain us? Because we thus judge that if one died for all, then we're all dead. And that he died for all, that they which live should not henceforth live unto themselves, but unto him which died for them and rose again. Why should I live my body to glorify the Lord? It's because He died for that body. It's all rooted and grounded in eternal salvation by sovereign grace. He died for you, and now you should sacrificially lay your life down on the altar to you, for Him to use you according to as He sees fit in His kingdom. In Ephesians 2, verse 10, again, God is the potter that's made us a good vessel. But at the same time, I want to kind of paint a picture of how the Lord uses each individual person to be crafted into a vessel to perform for you to serve in the kingdom in the manner that the Lord intends for you to serve in the kingdom. Okay. Now, we're in Corinthians, we see a picture of the body. Of a body can only be a body if it has different members. Because if you just have a whole bunch of hands sitting in a room, I mean, that's not a body. That's just a, you know, an amputee room. You know, I mean, if you got a bunch of hands sitting in a place, or a bunch of feet, or a bunch of heads, you know, Jesus Christ is the head of the church, so ain't no heads in there. But if you've got just a bunch of body parts in there, it's not a body. But when you have distinct members that perform specific roles that all work together in unity to become a body, though, we have diversity, and the Lord puts people in specific roles in the kingdom as He sees fit. Now, I want us to think about my body being a vessel, and that we hopefully have a sincere desire for Him to use this vessel, that we can pray prayers such as, Lord, nevertheless not my will, but thine be done. Lord, use me, use this vessel that you've given me in whatever manner you see fit. If you desire for me to be a hand, if you desire for me to be a foot, if you desire for me to be one of these internal organs that nobody ever sees, that never gets any credit except for the Lord, the Lord, because in so as much as you've done it unto the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto the Lord. So you're going to receive credit for it, but you may not be the person delivering. God may not call you to be the person delivering a message on Sunday morning. He may not call you to be a deacon. He may not call you to lead the singing. But you are just as absolutely vital in the kingdom of God and in the body of Christ as I'm just fulfilling the role that I feel like I've been called to. Do you feel the same way, Brother Matt? I am not anything special. I'm just trying to do the best I can in the kingdom, in the role that I think that I'm supposed to be in. And you need to find the role that you're supposed to be in and do the best you can in it. So as we think about that mindset, and I think about myself being a vessel, that we have to have diversity of vessels in a house for it to be a house. Because if you just have a whole bunch of plates sitting there, a whole bunch of bowls there, that's not a house. The church is described as the house of the Lord. So for a house, you've got to have plates, you've got to have bowls, you've got to have forks, you've got to have vases, and they all serve a different role in the house. But they're all important. And what we'll see is that God has a manner of bringing people into the correct role and sculpting their vessel so they can be the exact role that He intends for them to be in the church. So think about Ephesians 2:10, I hope you turn there, I'll get around to reading it. For we are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which God hath before ordained that we should walk in them. We are His workmanship, we are His creation. Yeah. And not only has He created this vessel, but you will find as you progress through your life how God has a way of sculpting your vessel into a vessel that is meet for the Master's use in the sense that He would have you to serve in His kingdom, okay? Now, this is not really applicable to us, but as you think about Bible times, we see a lot of people going from these people showing up at the wells. So they have these large water pots. And we don't really have those water pots, but those were very large pieces of pottery. But I want you to think about the different roles that a plate would serve or a bowl that would serve, and how the potter, knowing what he intended to make, I know I need to make a plate in this circumstance, I need to make a bowl in this circumstance, but the time may come that I need to create a new water pot. Now, his process of creating a sturdy, strong water pot that's going to be used to, it's definitely going to be a workman's vessel, because it needs to be stronger than a small little bitty bowl that's going to be used for just food in the kitchen. But I want you to see how the potter knows what it needs to be. He knows what it needs to end up being, but he uses different methods to construct the vessel into whatever he needs it to be. And a large, strong water pot is going to have to be constructed very differently than a vase that sits over in the corner and holds flour. Does this make sense? How the potter is going to have to do some things different in crafting that vessel so it can fulfill its intended use. Now, I think the Lord has a lot of tools in how he crafts our vessel into what he intends for us to serve in his kingdom. Now, he's the one that decides whatever you need to be, and you need to be content in whatever role he prescribes for you. If you have the attitude that I'm just happy to be a doorkeeper in the house of the Lord, and you keep that humble mindset like he told Saul, you know, when you were small in your own eyes, that's when I exalted you to the king. But then when you started thinking highly of yourself, that's when I took the kingdom away from you. If you keep that humble mindset, the Lord's going to use you in his kingdom. And if you are a willing vessel instead of a rigid vessel, he will use you in his kingdom. If you say, Lord, use me however you see fit, he will. But when you start saying, I'm only willing to do X, and I really don't want to do Y and Z, the Lord may not use you in quite a special manner. So, we think about the Apostle Paul, and he told, after he appears to him in Acts chapter 9, in a mighty and a profound way, and then he makes his way to Damascus, he's blind for 3 days, and then God comes to Ananias, and he says, go find a man named Saul. He says, go find a man named Saul. And of course, Ananias, he said, I don't know if you know this, Lord, but Saul's a pretty bad dude. I don't really want to go preach to him. And what he tells him to reassure him, and this is in Acts chapter 9 and verse 15, go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me. Bear my name before the Gentiles and the king and kings and children of Israel, and I will show him how great things he must suffer for my namesake. What he told him is, I have chosen Saul, for a specific task. He is a chosen vessel unto me. Now, every single child of God is a chosen vessel, okay? But I want you to understand, the Lord also makes a choice in the type of vessel that he desires for us to be in his kingdom, okay? For us to be meet for the master's use. And Paul was a very unique vessel, to say the least. And he was truly a chosen vessel. Now, as we think about how the potter begins to craft a vessel for its intended purpose, I think there's a lot of different ways that he crafts that vessel. And one of them is through people that he puts in our life. And I really feel that the vessel oftentimes is sculpted and crafted by the people that we have in our life that change our perceptions, that make us better people. He uses people for that, and he also uses situations too. He uses trials to sculpt us into the vessel that he needs to be, because we'll see a little bit later, if you're going to be a vessel that's truly meet for the master's use, there's some things that's going to have to be purged out of the vessel. There's some things that's going to have to be removed for us to be a refined vessel, some impurities that have to be removed for us to be meet for the master's use. And you'll find that it's often situations and trials that the Lord sends to purge out those impurities. Now, Paul was a very special vessel that was used in the service of the Lord, and he definitely crafted the Apostle Paul in a very special way. I mean, for someone to be both a Roman citizen and a Pharisee, to be able to relate to Roman law, but also to exhort the Jews, but then also to have that baggage that he had of, now the Lord did not set Paul on a path to do all the sins that he did before he born him again just so he could use it in the future. The Lord doesn't work like that. But the Lord is in the business of making good situations out of the mistakes that we make. And he used the baggage that Paul had as a testimony and really as a mindset for him too, that you know what, there is absolutely nobody that is beyond the grace of God. He mentioned that in one of his epistles, that if he could save me in the state that I was in, that I was persecuting the church and I was compelling Christians to blaspheme and I was consenting to the murder of a deacon and I was fully committed to destroying the Lord's church, there's no person that the Lord cannot convict and change in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, just like he did with Saul on the road to Damascus in Acts chapter 9, who is going in the exact opposite direction of the things that he should be doing, and the Lord appears to him, and now all of a sudden, he is fully committed to the cause of Christ. He's a great example in that sense, but also, I think I think the baggage that Paul had, it really came out in his labors with these churches that kept going back into false teaching, that were living in sin. And most people who maybe didn't have the baggage that he would have, he would just say, well, you know, I mean, these people just won't do what they're supposed to, and I'm just going to deliver them to Satan. But Paul, though, he had the mindset of this thorn in the flesh, this sinner that I was before the Lord came to me, and he was willing to go above and beyond. He says, I'm willing to spend and be spent for the cause of Christ. I'm willing to endure all things that I can save the elect in the gospel sense, that I can save them from destruction because of their sinful lifestyle. Now, the Lord didn't cause all the stuff, all the baggage that he had, but he used it to benefit the work that he intended for him to do. Now if we're going to be a vessel that is that's meat for the master's use, simply put, we can't put it on autopilot. We can't just go in a haphazard manner about our discipleship. There's some things that we have to remove from ourselves, because all of us, a child of God, has a nature of the flesh and it has a nature of the spirit. And we're always going to have that conflict. And we have to be sober and we have to be vigilant to make sure that our vessel is constantly being refined and improved so it can be more useful in the kingdom. It's like what Brother Marty mentioned, I think it was yesterday afternoon, about how judge not that you be not judged. Well, you can't see clearly to help a brother, and it's not a judgmental sense to, you know, if you see a mote in somebody's eye, if you see somebody, something wrong in somebody else's life, it's not judgmental or mean to point that out in a loving manner in hopes that they'll correct the problem that they have. But the point is, you can't see clearly to judge someone else's vessel, in the sense that we're talking about today, unless your vessel is purified. Unless the beam has been removed from your own eye, how can you judge somebody else's vessel? I mean, if you still have spiritual cataracts and you've got a 2x4 in your eye, there's no way that you can see a small little speck of dust in somebody else's eye. And even if you have a desire, a sincere, loving desire to help that person, you simply don't have the correct vision to be able to help them in the manner that you need to be. So, what do? You got to get the beam out of your own eye. Well, how do you get the beam out of your own eye? The same way that we purify the vessel that we have. So now we're in 1 Corinthians chapter 4. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3. This is the will of God. Now, there's a lot of young people in this congregation. I'm a young person too. And I think most people have a desire, what is the will of God for my life? Well, first thing is, you need to use this vessel to glorify Him to the best of your ability. And whatever, if you have a specific talent, if you're good at something, maybe use that in a career to where you can glorify Him. But what is the Lord's will for us on a day-in, day-out basis? I hope you've seen the theme here. It was in 2 Corinthians. He says 2 Timothy, rather. He says, you've been created unto good works. We saw that in Ephesians 2, unto good works. You've been bought and paid for that you may glorify the Lord. It's all about us doing good works then. So what's the will of God? Well, use your good works to glorify Him. And you know what? We're told in Matthew chapter 5 that people will see your good works. Well, not only am I glorifying the Lord, but people will see my good works and then they'll glorify the Lord. And if I'm concerned, if my chief concern in my life is the glory of God, one of the main reasons that I want to do good works is so other people will see me. And not that I'll get any credit for it, but that my Lord will receive even more glory from other people. That's my desire of why I have a desire to do good works, is that I desire for God to be glorified in me and in other people, and people might even see my good works and glorify God because of that. So what's the will of God for your life? Use this vessel that we have for the Master's use to glorify Him in whatever manner that we have. But specifically in this verse, he says even your sanctification, your practical sanctification, to use this vessel that you have and to purge it out for it to be used in the Master's service in whatever manner that he sees fit. So, this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that you abstain from fornication, all manner of sexual sin. He actually mentioned the exact same thing in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 when he's talking about the temple. The temple needs to be cleansed and used for the master's use. You simply cannot partake in these manners of sexual sins and our vessel be purified for the master's use. That every one of you should know how to possess his vessel in sanctification and honor. So what is the will of God for this vessel? It's that you would possess this vessel in sanctification and honor. Why? Because he gave you this vessel. It's his vessel. And you are the custodian. You are the steward for a short period of time. Everything that we've been given in this life, we're just simply stewards of. If you have money, let me tell you, when you pass away, somebody else is going to get that money. When you have possessions, when you pass away, somebody else is going to get that possessions. We're stewards of what we've been given. And I have been given this vessel for a short period of time to use here in this life. And I'm just a steward of a vessel that has already been bought and paid for by the blood of Jesus Christ. I'm a steward of it. So then I should use this vessel in every manner that I can, because it's not my own. I'm just a steward of it, unto sanctification and honor. Now, as I said before, for us to be truly refined in the service of the Lord, probably a better example is not pottery, but rather a metal, a silver or gold, because metal inevitably has impurities in that metal. And there's a process through which the impurities are removed from that metal. This is in Proverbs 25 and verse 4. It says, "Take away the dross from the silver, and there shall come forth a vessel for the finer." Now, what's dross? When you put silver, in this context, when you put silver into a refinery, the waste matter, the stony stuff that's not profitable, that's left over after this silver has been refined, the stuff that's left over at that point, that's what dross is. But what does that mean? That means maybe a better example would be when you put something through a filter, and then what you get on the bottom of the filter is the clean, pure stuff, but the stuff at the top of that filter is all that excess stuff that wasn't any good that needed to be taken out for it to be clean. Maybe that's the best example of, because I don't know a lot about steel and all this other stuff, but it's the excess impurities that were previously in that metal that now is removed because it's refined and it's pure. Well, for us to be refined and for us to be a vessel that's truly, truly pure, those infirmities and those waste particles just simply have to be removed. And I don't want to, sugarcoat it. I mean, the only way to remove impurities from metal is through heat. And that's why he says the trial of your faith being much more precious than of gold. Let's turn to Job. We spent some time in Job yesterday, and we know the trial that Job went through. Verse 9, he says, "On the left hand where he doth work," this is in Job 23, verse 9, "On the left hand where he doth work, I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand, I cannot see him." To me, this is talking about the providence of the Lord in your life. You'll notice the Lord's working even though you can't see him. He says he's on the left hand, and I know he's working on there, but I can't see it. And what is he doing? He is crafting, even when you're not even aware of it, he is crafting that vessel for its intended purpose. And I've seen that in my life. I've seen how when I was younger and not making spiritual decisions, that he was crafting a vessel that was going to be for a good intended use, but it wasn't because I was praying, "Lord, nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done." But instead, he was crafting the vessel in spite of myself. Not because of me, in spite of me. And I think that's what Job's talking about here. He's crafting the vessel in spite of my willful disobedience. But verse 10, he says, "He knoweth the way that I take." And it says, "When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold." Keep that in mind. And you don't have to turn here, but just listen to me. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 7, "That the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ." That's what Job was going through, the trial of his faith. But the end result of it is, he had a hope that when all of these impurities have been removed from this vessel, I will come forth as gold. That's what he said. He says, when you have sufficiently, through these trials and these tribulations, when you have sufficiently removed these impurities that are hindering me from serving you in the manner that I know I'm supposed to, when those are out of the way, I know I'm going to come forth as gold. And I'm going to be a vessel that's meet for the master's use. Now, I hope that you have a desire to be a vessel that's meet for the master's use, that the Lord is just, he's not a potter that just totally takes over our lives and just totally controls everything that we do and puts us where we're at and makes sure that we do everything right. He just doesn't work like that. I am thankful that, again, he is, at all points, he is still sovereign. And whereas I certainly don't believe in absolute predestination, I am a very strong believer in the heavy providence of God, that he can, and when I'm going in the wrong direction, not only can he fix me going in the wrong direction, but he can bring me back into the right direction. I believe that the Lord can do that, and he can overrule my will when he sees fit to do that. If you don't really agree with me on that, I would just encourage you to go read the book of Jonah. I mean, if you think you're going to go X direction and the Lord intends you, if you think that you're going to go west and the Lord intends for you to go east, the Lord might just pick you up and turn you back in the other direction. Now, at the same time, Jonah had to pay a little bit of penalty for him going in the wrong direction. And then, I just kind of have a feeling that whale put him right back to where he was at in the first place. That whale didn't shoot him all the way to Nineveh. I've got a feeling that it put him right back where he was supposed to, right where he was at in the first place. And then the Lord came to him and said, now you're right back where you started. Go do what I told you to do to start with. That's what I tend to think. So I'm thankful that the Lord has a manner of overruling our mistakes. But we need to have an attitude, though, that, Lord, if I see these impurities in my vessel, if I see something that is hindering me from your service, I hope that we can say, Lord, I desire to be a vessel that's meet for the master's use. And this one's tough. Lord, by whatever means necessary, get those impurities out of it. Because when you pray that prayer, again, the only way to get those impurities out is through heat. It's through the trial of your faith. So I don't want to sugarcoat it and, pretend like, it's all going to be, cupcakes and roses. I mean, John 15, where he says he's talking about the vine that's bringing forth fruit. Well, the vine that then became unfruitful, what did he have to do? He had to purge it back so it would bring forth more fruit. Well, purging is not a very pleasant experience. And I tell you, going through the trial of faith, going through the refinery of God is not always a pleasant experience. But the end of it, though, is just like Job said, I know at the end of it, I'm going to come forth as gold. But more than that, I am going to be a vessel that's meet for the master's use. That these impurities that were hindering me from serving Christ in the manner that I am right now, Lord, if I get those impurities out of the way, you can use me in a more profitable manner in your kingdom. And I hope that you can pray the same prayer that David prayed in Psalms 51. Please don't get to the point that you were at when David prayed this prayer, though. You don't have to commit some egregious sin and a prophet come point a finger in your face and say, thou art the man, for you to pray this prayer. And he said, purge me with hyssop. I want you to think about the terminology that's used here and the balance between our obedience but also the sovereignty of God in crafting our vessel. It's my obedience of praying this prayer, but at the same time I'm pleading for the Lord to cleanse my vessel. This is the balance here. Purge me with hyssop and I shall be clean. Wash me and I shall be whiter than snow. I look at my vessel and I realize that there's impurities in it. I realize that my vessel is dirty and not profitable. Lord, you purge me. Lord, you wash me. Lord, you take away the impurities. You do it. Verse 10, create in me a clean heart. Lord, if there's something in my heart that's not clean, Lord, remove the unclean part. And again, when you pray that prayer and you say, Lord, I desire for my heart to be clean. I hope we sing the song, pure in heart, O Lord, help me to be. Well, I tell you, if there's impurities in that heart, there's only one way they're coming out. And that's through the furnace of affliction. It's through the trial of your faith. But I hope that you have that desire, Lord, create in me a clean heart. Why? Because I desire to be a vessel that is meet for the master's use. And I guarantee you, if you have that attitude and you pray those prayers in humility and you truly are not being restrictive in the sense that, you know, Lord, I'm happy. This is how I was. This is my circumstance. You know, Lord, I'm happy to serve in your kingdom. If one of these days I end up being a deacon, that's just fine, you know. But that, trust me, that was my cap. That was all I was willing to do. Turned out, the Lord intended to craft my vessel in a different manner. Now, that's why the final authority is the Lord. He's eventually going to craft. He's going to take you to where you need to be if you're obedient. But at the same time, when you place restrictions on the Lord, you might not be serving in the kingdom in the manner that he calls you to be because you're not willing to submit to the role that he truly has for you. And that was my circle. And suffice to say, there were some things that had to change. There were some attitudes that had to change for me to accept the vessel and the role that I was supposed to have in the kingdom. And in summary, I certainly hope that we see the eternal salvation of the Lord, that we've been bought and paid for. And the reason why I should live for his glory is because he died for me, that my vessel is not my own anymore, it's been bought and paid for. But in a very practical sense, that the Lord would use this vessel in whatever manner he sees fit to serve in his kingdom, that it would be a vessel meet for the master's use, and that I would, and that's a daily pursuit, by the way, is to learn how to possess your vessel in sanctification and honor. That's a daily pursuit. And I hope that we can pray the prayer that David prayed. Lord, if there's anything in my vessel that's hindering me in your service, create in me a clean heart, purge me with hyssop, clean up this vessel that you've given me so I can be a vessel meet for the master's use. I've certainly enjoyed trying to deliver some messages this weekend, and I'm thankful for the hospitality that you've seen fit to give us, and I certainly hope that the Lord's been magnified and that you've been edified. Thank you.